persistence is really important, and I think failure is a great teacher because you have to be able to sit back from it and analyze, okay, what went wrong? Was it my gauge, or maybe it's not the right yarn? Or, you know, in the beginning, what was really interesting for me to learn about crochet was, wow, if you have a worsted weight yarn and you sit down with your stitch dictionary that has all these amazing lace stitches, they're not going to look that good in worsted weight, you know? So there was a lot I learned from, like, things that didn't work out.
That was Dora Orenstein, crochet designer and author of Top Down Crochet Sweaters, on this episode of Power Pearls Podcast, the place for yarn crafters to be inspired by the compelling stories of everyday knitters, crocheters, and designers. I'm Karagat Warner, the host of Power Pearls Podcast and executive editor of Creative Knitting Magazine. And I will dig deep and ask the big question, why we started knitting and what keeps our needles going. I know you love Power Pearls, or you wouldn't be listening to my voice right now. So here's what I need from you as a loyal listener. Power Pearls is a free show, and I want to keep it that way, so I need your support. So here's what you can do. Visit patreon.com/Power Pearls Podcast, and you can become a patron at $1, at $5, or whatever price works for your budget. And guess what? I've got some swag for you. Yes, I have rewards, so you can check them out there. So visit and check out more rewards at patreon.com/Power Pearls Podcast. And thanks to all of you who are already supporting the show. Your generosity means so much more than you know. Hey, welcome to another episode of Power Pearls Podcast. Today, I am chatting with New York City native Dora Orenstein, who is a designer of fashion crochet, author of 6 books, and a writer specializing in crochet history and international traditions. Dora's designs appear in major print and digital crochet publications. And given her avid interest in advancing the skills of the crochet community, she includes lots of in-depth technical information in all of her books. She also teaches crochet at a variety of consumer events, online, and in shops across the country. And earlier in life, Dora was a well-known soprano who sang contemporary classical music, most notably as the solo voice of the Philip Glass Ensemble. Being on the road as a musician gave Dora a love of travel, which has brought her to many exotic locations. And it's through this experience that Dora deepened her understanding for crochet and knitting and how they fit into the larger world of textiles. Well, thank you so much for joining Power Pearls today, Dora.
Thank you. It's great to be here and talking with you, Kara.
Well, I am especially excited to have you on the show for a few big reasons. Well, I just want to start with saying number one is because I am testing the waters a bit with infusing the Power Pearls podcast with crochet. So, you know, you are a perfect early guest in this category because I directly connect with you, you know, and your artistic approach to design, which I'm excited to talk with you about. And, you know, just how your past experience kind of influences this. And also because you are a New York City native like myself.
Right.
You know, and that just that in itself. Mm-hmm. So much influence in our artistic lives, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So what I want to do, and it's kind of like a little bit of a new thing. And so I asked you before we spoke, I asked you to share a quote with me, mm-hmm. and I'm going to read that quote, and then I'm going to ask you to like kind of elaborate on the meaning.
Sure.
Is that cool?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to read it now. So here it is. Anyone can be creative with their crochet if they aren't afraid to fail, and failure is the best teacher. So what advice would you give to someone who is afraid of failure at this craft? And what would you say to them to help them take that first step into being okay with failure?
Right. Well, I think to begin with, I would say that crochet is pretty easy. Certainly the basics are. So I would hope that anyone would at least get started with crochet. I think you have to be taught in a way that's most conducive for you. People have all different kinds of learning styles. So some people will do better all by themselves with a book, and others will do better with a video where they can see and hear somebody. And still others should maybe go to a shop and have somebody teach them. So that's just for getting started. But what I encounter as I go around teaching, and I'm doing what some people consider fairly fancy crochet, fairly advanced, I get a lot of people who come up to me and say, oh, I could never do that. And I think, wow, I really think you could. I don't think that there is anything terribly special about my background. And I want to say that I have not been a lifelong crocheter. I started out in my 50s.
Wow.
Which was already a while ago, let me tell you.
No, wow. So, yeah, then no, that's...
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you the whole story because it's kind of funny, but let me first answer this question.
Sure.
Yeah, so but I had no background in what is typically done in crochet. I just picked it up and wanted to make garments, and nobody told me it was hard. This was like in the early aughts, you know, and I did, at that time, there really weren't too many crochet books, so I read a couple of knitting books about it, and then I just started doing it, and of course, I had many failures. Being a New Yorker, since you brought it up, being a New Yorker, you know, you want to have a certain fashion sense, and I was not going to do anything with those garments or consider them done until they fit me well. So I really worked at it and I made a few things and they really, you know, came out great. I'm happy to say, and I had no idea that I had any talent whatsoever for designing. I'm not somebody who can draw well or do any of those visual type things. But specifically, so I got into designing pretty quickly without even realizing it. And I have to tell you that most of the first, I would say at least 3 or 4 years that I was designing, I had to do almost everything twice.
Oh, wow.
See, not the entire thing, but, you know, I would have a substantial piece of fabric and then realize, oh, this is not going to work. But that was how I learned to design, you know, and it was an amazing experience. So I think persistence is really important. And I think failure is a great teacher because you have to be able to sit back from it and analyze, okay, what went wrong? Was it my gauge or maybe it's not the right yarn? Or, you know, in the beginning, what was really interesting for me to learn about crochet was, wow, if you have a worsted weight yarn and you sit down with your stitch dictionary that has all these amazing lace stitches, they're not going to look that good in worsted weight, you know? So there was a lot I learned from like things that didn't work out. And so I know that for some reason, it seems that in our culture, failure is like a terrible taboo. I encounter this all the time. Also when I teach singing in a college and, you know, a lot of my kids that I teach, they're perfectionists. And the flip side of that is they're afraid to make one nasty sound. And I say to them, you know, you're not going to learn the new sounds I'm trying to teach you unless you're willing to make a really nasty sound once when you don't have so much control over everything, you know?
Yeah, I know.
They listen, they do learn better. So, yeah, I think that failure is a great teacher.
Yeah. No, I mean, thanks for elaborating on that because it's interesting how we just want to brush things away if they hurt or, you know, but they don't teach us. They're not teaching us the things that we really need to see. You know, so they're kind of, acting like a mirror. You know, you and I were talking about this earlier, and it's when you look at the mistakes like that, it's so helpful. It's so meaningful and powerful because you're like, that's what I need to do. It's just showing me what I need to do.
And
at the end of the day, it's just yarn, guys. It's just yarn.
That's right.
Right. And I think it's just I don't want to have to rip. But it's like the best designers and the best knitters and crocheters are rippers.
Oh,
they rip.
Oh, baby. Yeah. I rip.
You know,
I rip.
It's so true.
Yeah. Because want it, you know, and that's the other part. It's like when you're a person who has high standards, sometimes that whole attitude of fear of failure comes with the high standards. But if you want to have high standards, you have to be willing to, wow, I thought that would work, but I was wrong. You know, go back, pull it out, do it again. Oh, that one's better. So yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good. And, you know, and I was going to dive right into like talking about what you know, you're designing and your love for crochet and all that, but you know, that's expected. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to like kind of, you know,
veer to the right.
I'm going to surprise everybody. No, but I mean, I think it's important to go back even further, because I think that your artistic life, your life in the music world probably shed so much light on what you do today as a creative designer, as a crochet designer, as an artist. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about those beginnings and how they led you to where you are now?
Yeah, well, I would say that, you know, my parents were, they were both born in Europe in different countries, and they both had to leave because of the World War II and Nazism. And so when they came here, you know, they had very different values in some ways from typical Americans. And one of the things that was very important was to be a musician. And they started me on piano when I was 8 years old. And I loved it. And, you know, we always had a piano in the house. I was just showing you my piano here.
Yes, that's great.
So when I got, college age, I actually realized that singing was more my thing than piano. And I did have a many decades long career in singing. Now, the thing about that I think is relevant to your question is, you know, I think that one of the great gifts my parents gave me was that whole thing of you sit down and you have discipline, you know. You sit down at the piano, you don't just mess around, you know, you practice your piece. And my mom would be in the kitchen and, you know, I'd be practicing some Bach or some little Mozart or something. And she'd say, do it again with feeling. She didn't want it to be mechanical, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think that just got me. I think that whole discipline thing, and that's again comes back to now being a teacher now and how much harder I think it is for young people to have discipline. And by that, I mean, you sit with something and you really focus your mind and you know what you're aiming for, and then you do it until it gets that good. And it's the process itself is actually interesting. I find a lot of people are only interested in the outcome, you know, and not so interested in the process. And boy, you know, if you're going to knit and crochet, you better be interested in the process, because it's not going to be fast, right? You know, and I think probably though, you're also maybe talking a little bit about the whole aesthetic. It's funny. I don't know if music has directly informed it in any way. I mean, I certainly see parallels in this sense that, you know, I was a singer, I still am a singer. And so I'm an interpretive artist rather than a creator. I don't write stuff from scratch, although, you know, I have written a few little ditties. I have a very funny crochet rap song that I'll...
Oh, wow. Really? Like, oh, yeah. You're going to have to rap, Dora.
Yeah, I know. I'll send you links and you can want to put them up.
I was going to make you do it.
Yeah,
do
it. I didn't practice, so I'm not going to do it. So as a interpreter of song, right, my job was to take whatever piece and really make it come alive with my interpretation of it. And I think that is a parallel with crochet because, you know, I didn't invent these stitches. I use stitch patterns that other people have seen before, or motifs. And so in some ways it's true to say, well, there's nothing really new, but my job is to put them together in a really creative and interesting way. And I think that's an interesting parallel between music mm-hmm. and designing. And another one is the mathematical component. You know, I don't think of myself as any kind of math genius, far from it. But, you know, when you're doing music, you have to count your rhythms. And of course, music itself has a lot of internal, you know, number pitches all have high frequencies and stuff like that. So certainly numbers have been part of my life, you know, as a musician. And now they're again, even more so, because when you're sizing a garment, you know, there's a lot of number work. Mm. Which I kind of appreciate because it keeps my, you know, my aging brain alive and well. Oh. I like to tell myself while I'm sweating through the six sizes.
Yeah. And I see that with other designers and just, you know, hobbyist needle arts people, you know, that there's a fascination with math that goes along hand in hand with our passion for knitting, crochet and other similar crafts. So I think that there's such a parallel. You know, I have a background as a bookkeeper,
ah.
You know. And and I know others, other designers, you know, that either they were engineers and right. You know, Robin was an engineer.
Well, those, so, yeah. I kind of envy those people. I wish I could see it all in my head because I think that's something that the engineering brain can do. I'm a person, I know this is a little swerve off, but I do design on the hook. I have to see it and feel it. And oh, and then what I do when I, not especially when I started, now I feel much more confident to design, have a design concept in my head. But in the beginning, I would have this piece of fabric and then I'd stand in front of a mirror and I'd sort of drape, I guess I was doing pattern draping, you know, draping it all over my shoulder or this way and that way. And that would give me the idea for the design.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I can relate to that as far as the designing on the needle, uh-huh, as I say, because uh-huh. I've never designed anything in crochet, but I have my designing choices knit. And there's something really artistic and free and uninhibited about doing it on the needle or the hook, as you say, uh-huh, as opposed to on paper. And that's like, again, that's another kind of, it's like a shift in the way that your brain thinks. Uh-huh. So there's so many different ways of doing it. And I mean, that's why I was particularly interested in talking with you, because I get that about your work, that it is that very on the hook, uh-huh, you know, designing kind of influence. So now we talked a little bit about the failure thing, but uh-huh, I'm curious about the exploration of, you know, when you're designing on the hook, uh-huh, do you embrace those magical mistakes? You know? I like to call them magical, you know, they're not bad, you know, mistakes are not bad.
Right.
So, you know, I was going to ask you if you're very methodical or technical, but we already know that not necessarily, but of course you do have to have that side. So you need to shift your left, right brain,
yeah,
thinking a bit. So,
right,
so
right.
How would you describe that further?
You know, of course, what's interesting in this business is that you start with a proposal and a swatch, you know? So I think the interesting part comes in the swatching for me. I'm going to tie this into, what you talked about earlier, my travels, because a couple places that I get a lot of ideas from. So the most interesting trip I took was to Central Asia, and there I saw a lot of interesting things. But after I went to Central Asia, the same trip, I went to the Ukraine because I wanted to meet this amazing Ukrainian designer that I had gotten to know over the internet. Her name is Antonina Kuznetsova. And she brought me to this publisher where they publish unbelievable crochet magazines. It's called Duplet. And they're not like American magazines at all because there's no patterns. But they'll take, you know, they have a very avid Ukraine and Russia. They all, I think, learn all of these skills like at three, you know, and they're very, mm-hmm, very skilled. And so in that Duplet magazine, you'll see one little stitch and some designer has sat there and made 20 pages of all the different things you can do with that stitch. You know, mm-hmm, I mean, like with this combination and combined with that and with two chains between and with five chains, you know, just amazing. So a lot of times I will just sit there with that and that will just start to, you know, get my head going. And I'll just turn those pages. I was like, wow, that is so cool. I've never seen that before. The next thing I do is start to swatch it and see what kind of yarn is going to go well with it, you know, and mm-hmm, kind of the swatch is often the beginning of my idea rather than say a particular silhouette or a sweater or a bag or a, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So what I try to do, and you know, once you get into designing professionally, you have to be able to turn in these ideas out fast because, you know, the calls come in and they, you know, I want to submit say five or six ideas, you know, and it doesn't happen quickly. So if I'm swatching a lot as I go, then when the time comes to actually have a proposal, then I have all these swatches. I say, okay, now this publisher, I think that I want to propose a coat and a bag and a kid's hat or something like that. Then I'll start to go through my swatches, you know, and I think that's when, so, and then I'll do, then I'll struggle through the drawing. But anyway, I am getting back to your question. So I think it comes more than once I get the job and now I have to turn that concept into an actual design. you know, and then it has to get very technical. Okay, so if I'm doing that particular stitch pattern on this yarn and the gauge is X and now I need to design a small or a medium, then I have to get all mathy and technical at that point. So I think of the creative part more as the swatching part. And like another thing, like you were to get back to your question, so one of these things in duplet, the Russians and Ukrainians, they work a lot with thread. And I think that's because they really don't have the amazing yarn selection that we have here. And they're used to it, you know. So a lot of times I'll try some of that idea on a, you know, let's say a sport weight yarn. And it's like, So then I wouldn't say so much of a mistake, but then I have to get creative. Okay, I have to make it smaller or fatter or change, you know. There's a lot of reinterpreting, let's say, the stitches so that they work in the yarn that I have to use.
Yeah, you know what? What you say about the swatch is really interesting because, you know, I feel like that's a good thing to explore, and maybe not in this episode, but because we only have so much time, and I know your time is precious. But, you know, it is like your blueprint, and I absolutely agree in my own, you know, experiences that it is where the excitement starts with a design, because it's like the possibilities are inside. They're on that one swatch that's in your hand, this little 6x6 or whatever size you want to do. But it's like, it fascinates me to be honest with you. Cause you could say this can become a garment. This can become, you know, it's a simple accessory, but it can become something much more than that. Uh-huh. And then you're making something that wasn't there before.
Yeah.
And it's just phenomenal. So, well, thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Now, you said you learned in your 50s, but so, you know, because I always ask the question on the show, what was your pivotal moment? Like, so you started in your 50s, and what attracted you? Like, what brought crochet into your life at that time?
The story does go further back, and it's kind of a funny one. I was in college during those kind of crazy revolutionary years, and in the middle of my college life, I dropped out, and I spent a year in California and then another year in Holland, and I bought a tiny little houseboat, and I was living on this houseboat, and it was pretty crafty time, and the truth is I did do some crocheting at that time. I got some yarn from a friend who had a weaving store, and there was all these beautiful colors of yarn. And I think I learned from a magazine. I mean, my mom didn't crochet. I knew no crocheters, and there I was, not speaking Dutch and sitting in my little houseboat, and I learned how to crochet. Wow. And then I had this idea, even then, I want to make something to wear. And I just kept holding it up to me until it looked like something, you know? And this was the amazing thing, Kara. So I wasn't yet like a professional musician either, right? I was playing the piano a little and singing a little, but I was just a kid, you know, a young adult. Mm-hmm. I took this garment that I made, and here I am, a hippie, you know, not that clean.
Oh my gosh.
Living on the houseboat. I went into this very chic shop around the corner for me, and I showed them this thing, and she said, oh, I like that. I want to put it in the, you know, I would like to buy that from you. They sold two things that I made. I had no idea that I had talent or anything like that. And then I just completely forgot about crochet after that, you know? I spent 8 months in Holland. I didn't crochet the whole time. Came back to eventually came back, went to school, became a much more, you know, serious person and became a singer, musician. And then I really literally did not pick up the hook for all of those decades. And then when I was not performing anymore, I thought, oh, I need to find another creative outlet. And that's when the story I told you early picks up. You know, I said, oh, let me go back to garment making. Let me learn a little bit more. And so this was a pivotal moment. So I had a few garments. I decided to go to the CGOA conference, what's sometimes called the Knit and Crochet Show. And my very first class, I was taking a freeform class with the great Prudence Mapstone. So some of your listeners might know. Fantastic freeformer. And I was the first one there. I'm sitting there wearing a little crochet cotton top. And this lovely lady comes in, an older lady with a cane and beaming smile. And she says, oh, did you make that yourself? I said, yeah. She said, would you like to make money on your crochet? I say, how do I do that? She says, I'm a publisher. So that was Jean Linehauser. Some mentor, and she ushered me into the business and taught me how to write patterns, and she and Rita bought like 6 of my designs. So I was published right away. So not anything like my musical career, I can assure you.
Wow.
It was amazing. It was
so Jean Linehouser, did I say your name right? Yes. She has passed away, and she was with Leisure Arts.
She founded
or no?
Leisure Arts.
Yes.
She founded the Royal School of Needlework in this country. She was an amazing pioneer woman in our industry. And we were kindred spirits, I think, in a lot of ways. You know, she was a single woman. I have been married, but she never was. And she was just like a career woman and an amazing tech editor and just the best mentor, because, you know, she taught me everything, really. And then as I got ahead in the business, and, you know, it can be a very sometimes a little bewildering, and, you know, you come into situations you're not sure how to handle. I could always call her, and she would tell me what to do. So it was a wonderful, wonderful way into this design career.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because I feel like when you're open, like, I mean, you and I, we can talk about like sort of woo woo kind of get a little mindfulness, you know, mix of mindfulness in there, but, you know, I think when you're open and you're ready, and you were like in your earlier days, you know, crocheting, and then you left it, you know, you're in a different chapter.
Yeah.
And then here you are like sitting in a room, and there's Jean Linehouser,
yeah,
you know, and it's like, how did that really, it was that easy?
Uh-huh.
Because I can say that those experiences have come into my life. And I'm sure many of us listening can say the same thing. Like, you know, it's not so far fetched to imagine something entering your life that, you know, that can set you on that course for that thing that you've really put the intention out there to have, you know, the wish for.
And you have to be ready when it comes. I think that's another important thing, you know, because I also sometimes hear the thing, well, just put it out there. And I know you didn't mean it that simplistically, but, you know, you have to be ready when that moment comes, you know. And I think I was. I mean, I was wearing a cute top, you know, she liked it. And then once the things started to come in, I think this relates to something you mentioned earlier. That's where I think my life as a singer, which is, you know, you're a freelancer, you have to get out there and promote yourself and get the work and then do a good job and, you know, and deal with the review, whether it's good or bad, you know, all those things that really prepared me for the design career. Because I think if you don't have that background in, like, you know, kind of the freelance life, this is not, it's, you got to have a go-getting side to you. That was amazing preparation also.
Yeah.
You know,
and I was going to say, because that's like a segue into that conversation, because, you know, you had said this is, you got to be ready, and being ready, you know, that means, you know, be ready for sticking it out for the long haul.
Yeah.
And it's not an easy business. So I want you to, you know, kind of talk about that. You know, what's your biggest struggle, and how do you keep your head up? You know, because it is hard. It's not like we get into this because we want to make it's not a quick, rich. It's not a get rich quick scheme.
Or ever.
So, yeah, share your insights.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, since we were talking about the early period, daughter's early period. So at that time, although Rita and Jean were my fans, I wasn't getting published yet in magazines, you know, and it took a while for that to happen. And at that time, I decided a way in for me, because, you know, was I published my own little digital magazine, which was called Crochet Insider. And I interviewed a lot of people, and I did, you know, I did yarn reviews, and it was a way of me introducing myself to the whole community of yarn people. And it actually turned out to be a great door opener, because one of the first people I interviewed was Adina Klein, who was then the editor of Vogue Knitting. And she, you know, of course, I wore my cute little top when I went to interview her. And she was like, oh, that's cute. And then so soon after that, she started to, you know, publish me. And I used to put some crochet patterns in Simple Knits. And so that was, you know, I'm just wanting people to know that, you know, it might take a while. People sort of saw me more as a sort of, you know, because of Crochet Insider, they thought of me as a writer. Maybe they weren't as aware of my designing. But eventually, you know, I just kept at it until I won the hearts of those magazine editors, and I started to see more of my design work out there. So now I don't It's been, I think, 12 years or something that I've been in this. So it's quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And I think people know my work, and I think I've established myself, especially as a fashion designer, of which there are not so many in crochet. So that's a nice place to be. You know, I'm proud of that. But I think what's hard is just, you know, how many designs you have to put out to make ends meet, you know, to make the money come in the way you want to. And then you can't just limit yourself to designing. You have to teach if you can. You have to get those book deals. You know, in other words, there's a sort of a need to keep your name in the public eye a lot if you want to keep designing. You know, for a long time, I had the fantasy that I could just do as much as I want. But I don't think it works that way. I think you have to kind of keep your name out there and do as much as you can. But at the same time, I have the 2 days a week that I still teach singing because I don't want to lose the music part of my life. So, and then there's just a lot of pressure. So if you can imagine somebody, I'm dealing with maybe 4 or 5 publishers at a time. Mm-hmm. I also write the Talking Crochet newsletter for Annie.
That's right.
And, you know, I only do it once a month, but you'd be amazed. There's a lot of work that goes into finding this stuff. So there's just, like, I'm sure you know this situation. There are dozens of emails every day. It can get stressful. And since I have not made a secret, I'm no longer young, I definitely find that it's stress is much more difficult for me to tolerate and does affect my health at this stage of life. So I have to be really careful and not let that mount to a crazy thing. And, you know, if I'm really honest, I'm better at it, and I go to yoga almost every day, and that really helps me cool out, chill out. And also, like, just to be active is really important. But I think I'm still struggling. Sometimes the stress gets to me, and then, you know, then I have to step back and say, gee, I got to be able to cut something out.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your honesty, because I think it's something that, you know, it's important to know. It's important to hear. But I think that if this is the life that someone listening, you know, you want to pursue, it's sort of like, you know, in advance, you know, you can take off those rose colored glasses, you know, that, you know, and just sort of resolve to stick it out. And I think what you say, and you didn't use this word, but you said it in other ways, Dora, but consistency, mm-hmm. keeping yourself out there,
right.
Consistency, how many times can you hear that? We all hear it. It's not, it kind of rings true. You know, being consistent and continually in persevering,
yeah.
being persistent,
yeah.
all those kind of words, it's hugely important. And I also say too, it's about being scrappy. I mean, these are the things I talk about on the show, in the things that I teach and mentor other, you know, designers. It's like, you know, use all of your talents,
yeah.
creatively, and put yourself out there in different ways so that you can come back, number one, with fresh eyes to designing instead of an angry, I'm not making money.
Yeah.
Because you have to diversify.
Yes.
And you'll never make a living only being a pattern designer. Yeah. It's possible. People do it. But I'm just saying that's very uncommon.
Yeah. I don't even.
Especially now.
Especially now. And I don't think it's quite the same for crochet as knitting. You know, I think the two careers are maybe a little different in terms of the, you know, there's only so many magazines and things like that. You know,
it seems like there's more opportunity in crochet. Am I wrong? I feel like knitting is a little narrower.
I don't, you know, I guess it's hard to say. I think there are more publications in knitting.
Yeah.
But
we only have
1, 2, 3 print, three print magazines and 1 or 2 digital. On the other hand, there are fewer designers, I believe. Certainly in the garment area, there are fewer designers. Yeah. And, you know, I think the industry and what frustrates me a little about the industry, and I'm talking now about, oh, there's a big siren. I hope
yeah, that's okay. I was going to say, hey,
yeah.
this is really authentic. It's real life. She does live in New York, so she didn't lie. Anyway.
What I was going to say is there's not a good way, except one-on-one, there's not any structure that allows designers to communicate well with publishers and other people. I wish that was different. Like, for example, in TNNA, there could be more formal ways where we could have a conversation so that if I'm saying something about, you know, whether it's about fees or deadlines or patterns or sizing or anything, I don't want to be made to feel like I'm a troublemaker because I'm questioning something. I think there should be more open dialogue between the parties that be so that everybody could be treated fairly.
I totally agree with that. I really do. And I think that the times are changing, Dora. I really do, because it's an open playing field now and designers can choose to work with magazines or they can choose to work and on their own and be their own publisher. So that's something that publishers have to really wake up to. And it's, you know, it's definitely something that we're, you know, I'm looking at because I get it. I mean, it's something that I embrace myself as far as, you know, I think it's a good thing that's moving in that direction. But I also think that if publishers, traditional publishers like Creative Knitting, like Crochet, you know, all these magazines that Annie's owns, you know, if they can move and, flex like the wind, like the reed in the wind, you know, because it's important because nothing stays solid and the same. Right. So I think it is our core product, you know, that print magazine, but moving in other directions is really really important, but it hurts.
Yeah.
It hurts.
It hurts. It hurts while, you know, as a musician, I mean, it's amazing what's been happening as far as recordings. You know, the CD was everything when I was coming up as a musician and doesn't even exist anymore. So, I was very fortunate in the musical sides of things because back in the day when I was coming up as a singer, there was such a thing as arts funding. You know, that's gone now. So yes, all industries change. But if we who really love these things and love the arts and love creativity, you know, we have to forge along and be strong and do it regardless of whether we're shown the love or not, you know? And I think it does take a lot of strength to do that. And I think, that's why we bond together so strongly, isn't it?
It is, yes. And before I forget, I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about your, we have a little special giveaway that we want to share. But you have some designs coming up in Crochet or Crochet World, right? I just wanted to kind of plug you a little bit here, if that's...
I have, you know, honestly, I think I have something in one of those in almost every issue. I know there are two or three coming up in Crochet Exclamation and a couple of really cute fashion-y things in Crochet World. I think you'll find my work in almost every issue of those magazines, which is very cool.
I'm thinking, because Crochet Exclamation, I don't know if it's Crochet Magazine, on my computer, because I always forget. Of course, I should know this, but I wanted to because the issues are up. So anyway, you guys, if you are interested in checking out more in that respect, because Crochet, I think it's crochetmagazine.com probably, the winter issue. If you're probably in the winter issue is my guess. So great. I'm just wanted to see if you had any ideas about the designs that were coming
out. Yeah, you know, it's hard for me. There's always a gap between when you put it submitted and then I know Ellen, the editor, has been shifting things around a lot because I don't always know when something's being published. So I'm so sorry. I would have loved to say this or that design, but I don't know what's in the new one and which one it is.
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, you know, everyone knows that they can check things out and they'll check you out and we'll have at the end, you can share all your you know, website info and how people can learn. But in the meantime, you have a little giveaway. You have a book. We didn't really talk too much about your book. And I know, we've been on for a while. Oh my goodness. I could talk to you for hours.
I would like to talk about the book, of course.
Yeah, let's talk. I mean, because, you know, I think it's important to share some details about your book. Mm-hmm. And then we can tell everyone where they can enter for a chance to win.
So we will do a giveaway to one lucky winner, and that is for my new book, which is about to come out. And I actually heard from I had originally been told by the publisher that it was an October release date, but my fans who pre-ordered it on Amazon are telling me that they already got their books, so it is out.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it is called Top Down Crochet Sweaters, and I had a book a few years ago called Custom Crocheted Sweaters, which had all different types of constructions. But now I decided to do one strictly devoted to top down, mainly because, I think this is a little funny, so I'm going to tell this story. You know, it was, we were talking about designing and design career, and one of the things that one of the people who was coming up at the same time as me was the magnificent Doris Chan. And, you know, her thing was top down. So I said, you know, I'm going to stay away from top down so that I can be different than Doris, who's amazingly talented, you know. So sometimes you kind of have to assess your competition and say, okay, well, I'm going to make sure I don't do something similar, right? Yes. And so I kind of didn't explore top down, and I did all these other constructions. And then eventually I finally said, well, you know, let me figure out how to do top down. And of course, I became a total addict because it's a wonderful construction method, and it in some ways easier and less fussy.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
well, because you can try it on as you go. And that's what I love about anything made top down.
Yeah, although
it's so organic.
Yes. Although, to be honest, I try everything on as I go, all the constructions. I wrap that.
But it's easier though.
Yeah.
You know what
right,
I mean? Like
right.
It's a lot easier with top down, but anyway, go
no,
on.
You're
sorry.
Absolutely right. So, you know, I also was seeing how popular it was for everybody. So I said, let me do all top down. So what this book has 14 sweaters, and they come in pairs. So two of the sweaters will share the same, essentially the same yoke, but they'll be with different yarn, or one will be a cardigan and one will be a pullover. So they'll have different styles to them. And I also, you know, the other thing that I come up against is, so I'm sort of a small size, and I find that people think that means I can't design for a larger person. And I'm like, come on, I'm a pro. I can design for other people. In fact, I care a lot about the bigger gals, and I want that thing to look good. And I'm, you know, really careful about, you know, not making that armhole too deep and the shoulders too big. You know, I really care about that, all the sizes. I said to the publisher, you know, I really would like to make these sweater pairs in two different sizes. And can we have different size models so people can really see the sweaters on bigger people? And they were like, yeah. So I'm so happy about that, because I think it really will show readers that, you know, I can wear whatever your shape, you can wear these top down sweaters. And then also in the book is, as you know, you said it, you quoted me, I think, about the pedagogical content of my books. There are pages, it's not just a book of patterns. There are pages and pages on how to know which size to pick and how to alter your sweater, and don't be afraid, it's not hard. So there's a lot of guidance on how to get that sweater to fit just like you want it to do. So that's the book, Top Down Crochet Sweaters.
Wow, how exciting.
Yeah.
I have to say, yeah, that Dora, you are a pro, because that's the thing, the plus size, I'm just going to, you know, mention it, because that can be discouraging if someone picks up their hook. And this happens in knitting too. And they go for that size that says, this is going to fit me. Mm-hmm. And the armhole is too deep.
Yeah.
Or, you know, because it's an inexperienced pattern writer, may not realize, like, it doesn't increase. Every area of the pattern will not get bigger just because as it grows in a, you know, becomes larger. So it's understanding garment design, and that is that's important. That's so important. I think that it's an art and it's a skill.
Yes.
At the same time, and it takes, again, like we said before, you know, this process of, you know, well, we said being out there and consistent in that way of being in front of publishers and getting your work out, but also in your craft, in developing your skills.
Yes.
You've got to be studying and exploring. And, you know, I think that that's just a message that I think we need to let designers, you know, share with designers or aspiring designers. So, you know, that's like, I've heard a phrase, I know this sounds crazy, but you have to bleed a little bit through your eyeballs sometimes.
What does that mean exactly?
I don't know. It just means like you got to put some butt glue on
and sit down and do it.
And,
but you know about, can we talk another sec about sizing?
Yeah, this is fun. You know, I feel like every episode, I mean, I shoot for like the 30-minute mark, but we're longer than that. It's okay. But the episodes are as long They should be as long as they need to be. And this is a great conversation. So, yes.
Well, I want to talk to the crocheters and the knitters about getting it to fit, because, you know, I think it has to be realized that when we go to the, we as designers are told to follow certain guidelines that are on this website, you know, the CYCA, and those are standardized sizes, just like you will get in clothing that you go to the store for. And the problem is that people are not standardized, right? So I think, and this is something that I learned along the way from some of my great mentors, you know, I think this is Nancy Nearing actually who said this, smaller people maybe a little more standard because we're talking about their bones. But as people get more padding, and you know, it happens to everybody as you get older, then the shoulders will probably stay the same, that bony part of you, right?
Yeah.
But your boobs, your butt, your, you know, all these other parts are growing. So what I see a lot of the sizing issues have to do with, well, in that Sika guideline, it says the large should have, or the 2X should have a 18-inch shoulder to go with the whatever 48 or 50-inch bust. But in fact, that person has a 15-inch shoulder, you know? Mm-hmm. So the beauty of top-down, and this is why it is, like you said, one of the great things is, first of all, you don't have a shoulder seam. And in knitting, you're going to see a raglan. But guess what? In crochet, you're not even going to see a seam anywhere. It's just a yoke, which can fold on you anywhere. So really, this is the construction thing for those larger gals. And then when, you know, you're going to, you know, it's not that hard to increase until you get that thing to go around both arms and your body. And then to see, okay, now is where I'm ready to end this yoke and start my body, you know? So I really actually think it's an awesome construction for people who want to learn sweaters and for the larger people who are not standard sizes.
That's a good point. Yeah, because I was going to mention that this book is great, a great resource for anyone, any crocheter, or hey, I'm like getting inspired. I'm like ready, because I have, you know, I crochet, but it's been years. But like, it sounds like a learning resource for anybody. That's like, it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, you're just strictly in it for the hobby. Because I know we were just talking about designers, but this is like, this is going to advance your skills. And the thing is, the thing that I like about crochet, and I've always liked about crochet, is the sculptural aspects that knitting doesn't have.
Right.
It's not the same.
Hook anywhere, baby.
Absolutely. And for years, I only crocheted. And then I turned to knitting. And I don't know why now. I know why, but yeah. So it's just that's the thing that I just thought was so fascinating about crochet. Mm-hmm. And I could see how this would be perfect for, you know, just making those sweaters, and especially in the plus sizing would be easier than knitting too. So, hey guys,
well,
check it out.
You know, it's faster. I mean, a lot of the sweaters use trebles and double trebles, which really make the work go fast. One of my people in my Ravelry groups was just sort of teasing me a little because they don't see many sweaters that I do with worsted, and I don't, because I don't feel that in crochet you can get the drape of a garment that you need in worsted weight yarn. Each stitch that we make is a little thicker than a knitted stitch just by its nature. So if you want real drape in your fabric, you have to go down to, my favorite is fingering weight. But there are fingering, sport, and DK projects in this book. But, oh, I lost the train now. But, but the work can still be fast if you use tall stitches. Plus, tall stitches have a wonderful drape also as well. So, yeah, crochet is actually a much more awesome vehicle for garment making than a lot of knitters realize.
Yes, absolutely. And
to do something different, you know.
Exactly. And I love that you say you like to use fingering weight, because even with knitting, my yarn of choice is fingering or DK weight. And the thing that I personally felt a little aversion towards with crochet was just the look of the stitch pattern in like a worsted or a chunk, because it looks too crafty for my taste, especially as a garment. Mm-hmm. And that's not bad if that's what you're after, you know, more of a crafty kind of granny square looking fun boho look.
Yeah.
But I prefer, like, I want drape. And if it's a garment, and I'm going to make something crochet, I'd rather it be fingering, you know? Mm-hmm. So then it just has a more exquisite, delicate look to
yes,
it.
Yes, yes.
So I'm excited about your book. So you guys, if you go to Power Pearls, I almost stuttered there, powerpearlspodcast.com/Dora, D-O-R-A. And then you can enter to win a copy for your chance to win a copy of this book. And so the contest will end midnight, October 21st. So go on over and check it out. So Dora, this was great. So before we sign off, can you share how the listeners can learn more about you, you know, on Ravelry, on your website, on Facebook,
sure.
Whatever. Share away.
Yeah, well, so I still have crochetinsider.com is still my website. It's all one word, and you can see some of my indie patterns for sale there. And my Ravelry group is also called Crochet Insider. And, you know, I really love to mentor people, and I'm hoping that we can get enough people interested to do a cowl via Ravelry. And there are definitely one or two sweaters that are really not very difficult in the book. So I'm hoping we can all get started together and, you know, begin that neckline together and get that neckline just the right number of inches for you and, you know, all the niceties of top-down construction. I would get great pleasure if I can do it with a group of people. So please come on over to Ravelry and join the Crochet Insider group.
And let me know when that starts, Dora, because, you know, even everyone will go visit your website, but let me know. Then I can do an announcement,
right
about on the blog here. So everyone, you know, so the Power Pearls listeners can
wonderful.
You
know, that's keep great.
In, stay in the
thank
loop.
You, yeah. Thank you.
Well, anywhere else people can find you, or is it everything kind of just go to your website
Facebook,
and that's
you know,
a good place
I'm,
to start.
I'm on Facebook as me, Dora Orenstein, and my last name, which has a very Germanic spelling, is O-H-R-E-N-S-T-E-I-N.
Awesome. Well, this was great, Dora. Thanks so much for joining me.
It was a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
This episode was brought to you by Annie's Signature Designs, who has recently launched Autumn Bliss, a collection of more than 40 knit and crochet patterns envisioned by Lena Skvargason, lead designer of Annie's Signature Designs, along with supporting like-minded designers, including myself, Robin Chichula, Megan Jones, Jackie Dougherty, and more. So if you really want to learn more, go on and visit anniessignaturedesigns.com. Well, I hope you liked that episode with Dora. I so enjoy speaking with her, and I feel like I really resonate with her and her whole approach to crochet and just yarn crafting in general, because she, you know, she has just an incredibly artistic approach. And also the fact that we're both New Yorkers, you know, I mean, probably has something to do with it. You know, it's been a long time since I lived in New York, but I still feel like a New York girl. And, you know, there's so many things that I can connect with Dora on. So that is, it's really exciting to be able to talk to her and also get to see her every now and again at some of the shows that I go to. So, don't forget to hop on over to powerpearlspodcast.com/Dora. So you can enter for your chance to win a copy of her book, Top Down Crochet Sweaters. And also, if you would be able to, I would love it if you would hop on over to iTunes and leave me a 5-star review and rating. And, you know, if you're not at a computer right now, perhaps you're running or you're walking or running errands or knitting or crocheting. And if you leave me a review, you just might get a little plug from me here on the podcast. So thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next time.